from One World Trade Center, where we can't figure out a 401k, but we can fill out a fantasy lineup. Welcome to the Golf Digest Fantasy Podcast.
Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix Podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and as always, I'm joined by Joel Beal. We're coming off an interesting week at Hilton Head, where Wesley Bryan broke through for his first PGA Tour title. Of course, Wesley Bryan was the former trick shot artist turned PGA Tour star now.
Oh, is that who that was?
And Joel, you had him last week. You picked him.
We did, so I believe you picked Luke Donald.
Did. And because of that discussion, we picked him up on our fantasy team, although it didn't matter because we only had two guys make the cut. But if we had more guys, it would have been a big week because Luke Donald, that was a nice late pickup. So, yeah, kudos to both of us.
It's bananas. Looking at his track record, that was his fourth top three in the past 5 years at Hilton Head. In that same span, Luke Donald only has one other top three
Amazing.
In like 80 other events on tour. So, yeah. Hey, Hilton Head speaks to him.
He is what Phil Mickelson is at the U.S. Open, Luke Donald is at the RBC Heritage. Five runner-ups, two third-place finishes, zero wins. It's amazing. That's amazing to come that close that many times. And, I mean, you mentioned for him to do it this week, it just shows you it doesn't matter how he's playing. He can roll out of bed and play that course for whatever reason. So.
And you'll see in our picks this week, there's just some guys who, for a reason, a certain course brings out the best of them. It doesn't matter how hot they're coming, or I should say it doesn't matter how cold they're coming in. It just gets them right. And I think at least my picks this week, there's three guys like that I feel mm-hmm. like aren't really coming in that great. Mm-hmm. But this is the course they've had success on, and I expect them to play well this week as well.
Two things really jumped out, obviously, from last week. We already mentioned both of them. But Luke Donald's short game was out of this world. I mean, he was holing shots from everywhere. It was reminiscent of, obviously, I mean, this guy was number one in the world for mm-hmm. about a year even, and he's never been a great driver of the ball or a long hitter by any means. In fact, he's one of the shortest hitters, but the putting and specifically his bunker play, I mean, when he misses a green, it's almost a scoring opportunity for him to mm-hmm. to at least on a par five, he's going to get up and down for a birdie, and on a par four, he's liable to hole a couple every tournament when he's on. So pretty amazing stuff by him. And then Wesley Bryan, he had been sort of game tested in that he had two other top five finishes this year. He won three times, obviously, last year in the Web.com Tour. But even he said in that interview where he said he threw up a little in his mouth that standing on the 17th tee of a PGA Tour event on Sunday with the lead is a little different.
But, different animal than having a nice little – if you actually look back at the other – because I think he had, three top tens going into Hilton Head.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't exactly – he was going in a Sunday with a shot at the right. at the title. It was more of, hey, had a nice 67, 68 and went from T11 to T4. So, it was a rare position for me. And in that regard, it even shows you more of his moxie in the first time. You've seen him kind of across the board. A lot of these guys need a few reps to be in that position. They don't really – it's not a breakthrough their first time leading. It usually takes them two tries. So, granted, for what Brian's been through, he was just a reality TV contestant two years ago.
And yeah.
Now the guy's one of the top 40 players in the world.
Right. I mean, I know he was on the big break, too. He obviously didn't win.
No.
I don't even know what that entails. But he couldn't win the big break. A couple years later, he's winning on the PGA Tour. It's pretty amazing. And I asked him about making the President's Cup team or the Ryder Cup team. He's in really good shape to do it because, those point systems, yes, they go for 2 years back, but they don't count all the events. And so this year is going to be amplified. And I saw something, I think he's up to 37th in the world ranking, which is amazing because, again, he just got on the Web.com Tour last year. But if you just looked at world ranking points this year, I think he'd be 21st in the world. Or not even this year, if you just took – if you didn't make him do the minimum divisor, which is the 40 events, he's only played 33 events as even a pro on a major tour, he'd be 21st in the world. So this guy is really a legit player.
Yeah, I think he still has a little bit of work to do. As you mentioned, the last year, even though in terms of the way they do Ryder Cup and President's Cup now, the year of definitely weighs heavier in the equation. But he's at least in the running, and he'll at least be a viable candidate as a captain's pick.
Right.
And the fact that he's even in that conversation in his rookie year is outstanding.
Right. And I like it, too, because he's actually not, you know, everybody who comes up now is a bomber. He's actually not a bomber.
No, not even close.
Not even close. And he'll admit, I mean, he's the first to admit it. I mean, and so he kind of, you know, he relies on his short game a lot, kind of like Luke Donald. And it just, you know, for us guys, not you, Joel, you can crush it. But for us guys who can't, you know, crush those 300-yard drives routinely like you beasts, he's an inspiration.
It will be interesting to see how his summer plays out, because there are a few other tournaments, just like Colonial off the top of my head, a short course. But we're kind of getting to that part of the schedule now it is a longer course. So it'll be – I mean, again, he's already secured two years, so he's fine. But it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the year plays out.
And he said he's going to keep a full schedule just because he does want to test out different courses. He knew Hilton Head, Harbortown suited his game. He grew up in South Carolina.
His dad
played in the tournament once. So he knew that he had his eye on this event, but he wants to test out a bunch of other ones because, you never know. There might be a course that he thinks won't suit him, but maybe he shows up that week and he likes it. So, all right, but let's move on to this week's event. We've got the Valero Texas Open at TPC San Antonio Oaks Course, which is a Greg Norman design. I know he can be a bit of a lightning rod when you mention his name in terms of course architecture, but
with, I believe, input from Sergio.
And I think at the time Sergio was dating his daughter. It was around that time, at least. It was a little so. Yeah, you wonder. No Sergio this week. He has played this event though before, but this course is one of the tougher. I mean, not one of the toughest, but it's a pretty tough course.
No, it's in the top five in terms of scoring relation to par.
Right.
Also, one of the least favorite of the tour guys. I think a lot of that. Yeah. I think there's a correlation between the two. Also, it's still a relatively new course, and those courses don't really tend to evaluate well with the guys. But if you kind of look, it's off the top of your, you know, at the first glance, it looks like longer hitters do well here. Instead, it's more of guys who really play well in tough conditions and can avoid the big score. You look at kind of some of the past winners, and you almost get like a U.S. Open-like feel in terms of, hey, you know what? It's just these guys who are really good about saving par instead of going bogey or worse.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, you know, we have to, since it's Texas Open, we have to acknowledge the anniversary of one Kevin Na's 16.
That's right.
One of the great, not great moments.
One of the great, not great moments. I like that. Yeah. 16 on the ninth hole, par 4, 12 over par. If that happened today, we would probably do about 10 different posts off that.
There'd be a few think pieces on
Back, I remember when it happened, it was, I mean, you know, we definitely, it was a big deal, but it wasn't like, I mean, now that would blow up Twitter. It would blow up everything. I mean, everybody, Kevin Na would be trending on Twitter, put it that way.
What's your highest score on a single hole?
I don't know. Once you get the handicap down enough and you can take those double bogey maxes, I definitely try to. But no, I do remember once on our golf trip, when before we switched to the USGA rules of double bogey max, or I guess if you're above a certain, you can take an 8 or anyway, we would play double par plus 1. And it was the Cougar Point course in Kiowa. And it's a tough par 4 at the end. And I put up a 9 on the par 4. I maxed out, and that ended my tournament. And so that'd be the one I remember.
I can tell you. The look in your eye, right? Kind of went away for a second. You're having flashbacks. Right.
But, yeah, I haven't done enough tournaments like you to where I've actually had to finish a hole and write that number down. So I don't. You probably have a big number.
Well, the one that's coming to mind is a guy who was the city and he ended up playing pretty high. I think he played the minor tours for a few years. I think he was 1-under going into 17 of a place called Shaker Run in Ohio, and had put 6 in the water, and someone said he had a putt for 19, and walked off the course.
Who was this guy? Just a
I don't want to say the name.
A
just
friend?
For,
no, he's a player.
Not a friend, but he's I mean, again, he played on the mini tours.
Wow.
For a little bit, so yeah, that was and as a coach, it's kind of a funny story, but one of our kids we were playing against. Put his 9-hole score on hole 9 instead of things. So basically he had a 38 but signed for a 38 as his 9-hole, so shot 75 or something like that. So that was a little tough to watch. But technically the highest I've seen is 38 on a card.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Kevin Na is not playing this week, so we will not see a 16 from him. You never know, though. We could see it from somebody else. Of the players who are playing, well, first, before we jump into our picks, I do want to say that Golf Digest has an ongoing partnership with FanDuel, daily fantasy site. Check out FanDuel.com/Golf Digest. You can get into a contest there. You can win cash prizes. You can also win golf clubs. I know last week we gave out a Callaway GBB Epic driver.
Which you now have in your bag.
Which I now am testing on a test run in the bag right now. Yep, yep.
You're in the Rory plan. You're kind of going back and forth. You don't have a contract
I don't
now,
have a contract. I'm shopping around. So, if you know, club manufacturers out there, you know, I'm all ears to your offers. But also, you can get a free one-year subscription of Golf Digest if you sign up for the league. So please check out FanDuel.com/Golf Digest. It's a really cool game. You pick four guys for the first two rounds and four guys for rounds three and four. You have a salary cap. So check it out. So anyway, with that in mind, we will get to our picks. Joel, who are you starting with?
First guy for me is Charlie Hoffman. I was the guy who missed the cut at Hilton Head last week, but does not matter whatsoever. He's made 11 starts at this event 10 times. He's finished 13th or better, highlighted by a win at last year's tournament. He's actually played really well in 2017. I know Augusta National from a few weeks ago is what pops out, but he's had a couple other top fives on his resume. But kind of as we mentioned earlier with Luke Donald, there are just some guys who are in the zone at a certain course, and that's really only the clear case for Charlie Hoffman this week.
Yeah, and, you know, he did fade at Augusta National, but still, that T22, I feel like, is better than a normal T22. I mean, he was out in front for two rounds at the Masters. He played in the final group on Saturday with Ricky Fowler, right? That's a great accomplishment for someone as they build towards winning a bigger event. Obviously, he's won PGA Tour events. Nobody expected him to hang in there for the majors at the Masters. Sorry, that's just how it is, Charlie Hoffman. But you know, again, it was a solid week, and this tournament is certainly a tournament where if you see him up near the top of the leaderboard, there's no reason to think he can't close the deal, because he has.
It's kind of interesting that I think people would be surprised that he finished outside the top 20, given that he was one of the few players that seemed like were on our television sets for at least 3.5 days, where someone like Kevin Chappell maybe saw one or two shots and he finished top 10 or what, 7th, I think.
Right.
So it's weird. It's 2017. We still haven't quite figured out the whole broadcasting thing in terms of we can broadcast. Maybe, but you never know.
Yeah. Speak of the Chappell, Kevin Chappell is my first pick.
What a segue.
Well, he was going to be my number two pick, but I'll move him up to number one. Doesn't really matter. T7 at the Masters, as you mentioned. And you mentioned him being on TV. It's funny because ClassicSportsTV.com tracks this stuff, and he was actually the highest finisher who was not shown on TV on Sunday. So we saw zero shots of Kevin Chappell, finished T7. Again, it was a total backdoor T7. It's not like he was in the hunt ever. Mm-hmm. But it was just an interesting footnote. We did see, I think it was like 10 shots apiece from Stuart Hagestad and Curtis Luck. They play up the amateur angle. There's definitely not – it's not by accident. CBS was showing those guys.
And that's great because that's a set of the golf universe that is often ignored. The Hagestad thing was getting a little ridiculous. I'm going on record. I'm sorry. He's not an amateur. He quit his job to practice golf for an entire year.
You're right.
I'm sorry. That's not.
You're right.
That doesn't qualify. I'm told he's a fantastic person, and I really wish I had his golf game, but that's not an amateur in my books.
You're
coming
right
down on it hard.
Yeah. When I first heard the story, and they said he was, you know, a financial analyst, I really pictured that. He, you know, okay, maybe till the week before, was at his desk, you know, slaving away like the rest of us, 8 to 6 or whatever those guys work, the financial guys, they work longer hours than us, at least at their desks, and that he just kind of rolled into Augusta and just casually made the cut. I was like, this guy is one of the biggest legends ever.
Been at the course 60 hours a week for the last 8 months.
Took a leave of absence from his company. Again, it's still, we kid around, it's still an amazing, amazing accomplishment. He made the cut at the Masters, was low amateur, finished T36, and now is going to pursue his MBA and not turn pro. Even Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank was begging him to change his mind, saying anybody can go out there basically and get an MBA, but not anybody can go out there and play golf. I kind of see his point. You'd think he'd at least want to give it a go.
Yeah, but at the same time, it also kind of secures a little bit of the kind of gravitas around him. That's true. Oh, that's the, you know, this is that's the guy who kind of turned. Yeah.
Yeah, he could play if he wanted to.
It's honestly, it's, right. I honestly, it's, if he's, and plus if you're front money,
right.
Well, why not?
Right.
It's not exactly, it's not a glamorous life being in the minor leagues.
Right.
That's
no,
where
it's,
you get to go.
It's not. Yeah. It reminds me of, who is it? Oh, Ichiro. Ichiro supposedly could have hit 40 home runs a year if he wanted to, but he didn't want to. So he just slapped it around.
That's
singles.
That. The guy, I saw him take batting practice a few times. He,
could you say
he
could
legitimately
it?
Was putting in, you know, 10 yeah. runs at every, like, right. every swing. So
maybe there's something to it. But no, I don't think that Stuart Hagestad, but I do think he's got a pretty decent life. I think he's playing a lot of golf. I think he's making a lot of money. And I think you're right. I think he gets to walk around now as the guy who made the cut at the Masters for the rest of his life. And that's pretty awesome. So good for him. Anyway, Kevin Chappell, back to him. $6,600 on FanDuel, which is actually pretty cheap. The average price, if you got eight guys for the $60,000 salary cap, would be $7,500. So he's well below that. I'm actually kind of surprised. I think we're both surprised that he hasn't done more this year, but that T7 at the Masters certainly was a nice sign. This is a guy who finished runner-up four times last year. He's still looking for his first PGA Tour title. But again, you know, he's a really solid player. And you mentioned it's kind of like a U.S. Open course. We've seen him put up a couple really high finishes, a couple top fives, I think, at the U.S. Open. So I like him this week, and I especially like him at that $6,600 price.
Well, last year, too, at the Tour Championship, remember, he was kind of going down the wire with Ryan Moore as one of the guys who could be final captain's pick. And he made a point before Sunday to say, you know, this is a course I thrive in. I like playing in these tough conditions. And if you look at his career, these, yes, he hasn't won, but he has a lot of top fives at courses where tend to, at the end of the year, be one of the higher ranking in terms of scoring a par courses. So if it's anything like he's done in the past, this should be a place where he'll thrive at.
I'll go next with another guy who we saw play extremely well at the Masters, at least on Sunday, and then extremely well at Hilton Head, at least on Sunday, and that's Matt Kuchar, who, I mean, we've always kind of joked about his ability at backdoor finishes, but Kuchar-ing really is a thing now. I mean, that is what it is. We have to call – he is the best at it.
It used to be Rory-ing, but yeah.
It used to be Rory-ing, but like Rory wins more, and Rory is out in front more than Kuchar. I mean, Kuchar's the guy who's just – he's kind of around, and then you're like, we finished T4 at the Masters? I mean, it's crazy. So that being said, though, the guy rakes in cash. He's had an incredible career, and he's won. He's won his fair share, but obviously he hasn't been picking up the wins a lot in recent years. But sure, these top five finishes will definitely help. The only thing that gives me a little pause this week is he is the – priciest player on the FanDuel board at 10,200. But again, I think he's worth it. I just think he's almost a lock for a top 10 finish this week.
And I know that might seem dismissive of us saying he kind of backdoors it, but you know what? That's all that matters is how you finish. It doesn't matter how you get there.
You're right. It really does. It's not even, I mean, yeah, I think it is a little tougher to play in one of those final groups. You feel the pressure more, but it is still four rounds that add up, just like, you know, a baseball season is 162 games. I mean, technically that first game counts just as much as the last game. You add it all up to see what your final record is. And when you add it up for him, he puts together four solid rounds, or at least one amazing round and three pretty solid rounds.
So that's been the one thing this year. If you look, it seems like there's been one round where he shoots 71 or 72, which is, you know, three or four strokes back from what everyone else is doing. That's kind of hurt him. This could be the week, though. You know, you never know. This could be – you don't really have to go low to win here.
No.
If he stays around 70 every day, that should put him in position on Sunday.
Right. Who's your next guy?
Next guy is Brooks Koepka, who he's had a rough stretch, you know, most of this year. He kind of started to turn the corner a little bit at match play, made the Sweet 16, and then he finished 11th at the Masters. That's another guy who I think surprised a lot of people. Kind of one of those – didn't really know.
It's my only bet that even gave me a second of hope. When I saw him, got him into the top 10 for a hot second on Sunday. But, anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk about your wall performance there.
That was bad. That was bad. Yeah.
But, you know, he doesn't really have much of a track record at this event. But, again, it was mentioned earlier, big hitters with really good imaginations, or at least in terms of short game imaginations, tend to do well here. He's a little bit on the expensive side, but I think he's a good bet for a top 10 this week.
He got off to a brutal start. We were all wondering what's going wrong. I know we've talked about it. He said he fixed his swing after he missed the cut at Bay Hill. He went to the range, which, again, that's a great sign that he didn't just pack it up and go home. Mm-hmm. He went out to the range and quote, found something. And he's played a lot better since. But still, I mean, when he won at Waste Management, right, a couple of years ago, I mean, he hasn't won since. I mean, that's great. No. I mean, we would have thought, you know, you'd hear that name. I mean, he's kind of a big name. Obviously, got the big deal. You know, the sponsorship deal and all that with Nike. You think of him as a big name, but with only one win, he's not to that. He's kind of in that Ricky Fowler zone before Fowler broke through. In that, he's too talented to only have one win. We're trying to give him credit here.
He's in that weird zone of golf writers love talking about him because right. You do fall in love with him watching his game, but unfortunately the results quite haven't matched the talent we think he had. Not think we has what we've seen.
Yeah, we know.
He just kind of needs to. It's a little bit of course management and it's a little bit of keeping things together when things go south. But as we've mentioned in the last few times we've seen him, he's starting to show that again. So I think Koepka, again, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a top five this week.
My next guy, another guy, I wouldn't be surprised to see top five, and I would say I wouldn't be surprised. I actually wouldn't be surprised if he wins this week because his only win came here, and that's Brendan Steele, one of our guys on the Masters of None juggernaut fantasy team, although it's not so much of a juggernaut because our guys decided not to play last week for some reason, including Brendan Steele.
They needed a week off, you know.
They needed a week off, I guess. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a full lineup. That really hurt us. But hopefully Mr. Steele, Man of Steele, is back this week. He won here in 2011. He's had two other top 10s, and he had a T13 last year. And maybe that week off, I hope he's refreshed, put it that way. I hope he's refreshed because I thought Harbortown would be a nice course for him to play. But anyway, hopefully he's back this week, and he's playing well. And at $8,500, he's a little pricey, but I still take him.
Yeah, I think that price tag might shock a few people because he's definitely not in that household name status right. yet. The one thing I enjoy about Steele is that his game transfers to a lot of different courses. He's a very versatile player. I think that versatility comes in handy at a place like this where, again, scoring is going to be it's going to be tough to get to 8, 9 under. I think 4 or 5 under could win, and I think that really speaks well to Steele's game.
Yeah, and you mentioned before avoiding the big number. He's certainly one of the best at that. All right, who else you got?
Patrick Reed, and it's a bit of a wild card pick because I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He's been not good this year. His last top 20 came all the way back in January. He missed his last two cuts, really three if you count not making out of the round robin format and match play.
Right.
He's just too good of a player to continue this display. If you're looking for a place to bounce back, I think this would be it. He finished runner up at this event last spring. Again, might not have the distance as others in the field, but Reed is a guy, as we talked about earlier, who excels at tough courses. He won at Bethpage last year. He had a win at Doral, two of the tougher, well, at least Doral, when it was in the running in the tour schedule, one of the tougher places to play. I think if you can't get it done this week, I think it's time to be concerned about what's going on with Patrick Reed.
Yeah, that's you said first top 20 since January. I mean, even last year when he wasn't winning. And I know we were tracking him because he was on our team, but I mean, he was finishing in the top 15 every week and top 10 almost every. He was second to Dustin Johnson in top 10. So that is weird that he's off to a tough start like that. My last guy is another guy who's off to a terrible start, but he finished T11 last week. So maybe he's getting something going. That's Ryan Palmer. He's a Texas guy. T6 in 2015 here, T4 last year. He's $7,700, so he's just a little above the average price, so I think that's a really good buy. And more importantly, Jordan Spieth announced last week that Ryan Palmer will be his partner at next week's Zurich Classic. So if Jordan Spieth is partnering with this dude, he must see something positive in his game.
That or he just... really got, he saw what Patrick Reed was doing and decided he needed to
go another direction.
Yeah. Not ruling it out.
Maybe. That's true. Maybe I'm reading too much into this. But speaking of that, though, it's kind of weird. You got all four of the SB 2K17 guys are playing in the Zurich Classic, and none of them are teaming up together. Are they just tired of each other? Or are they?
Well, I know Fowler and Day were one of the first
commits. Yes, they were. Exactly. The first day they were,
This is not an event. I think this is right. I think Spieth, this might be his first time playing. So mm-hmm. I think he was a pretty late commit in terms of that. But yeah, it does surprise you. Well, Thomas is going with a old college buddy and yep. a buddy colleague. Right. So that makes sense. But yeah, it's, I mean, hey, maybe they maybe that's why they get along so well together, is that they don't play. Maybe, you know, if it's your partner, you can't really, you know, can't really tee up on them. Who would your guy be if you had to pick any guy?
I had to pick any guy. Well, Bill Haas, I mean, of course, at Wake Forest. I mean, most of these guys
are just picking over Webb.
Oh yeah, over. Big I don't guy. Have a connection. I missed Webb, but no offense, Webb. You're a great guy, but Bill Haas is my classmate, so I got to stick with him. No, a lot of these guys are picking like college guys, which is pretty cool. It's pretty fun. Brooks Koepka is picking his younger brother, Chase Koepka. That's interesting.
Smart move.
I wonder if that raises some eyebrows among the people.
He definitely needed an exemption, I believe, because I think he's over in Europe, but he's not even on the Europe tour. He's in a minor league. So,
is he taking a spot or not? I mean, it's a cool story, but I'm sure there are some people out there who are struggling for their card that might not think it's such a cool story. But anyway, we could talk about that next week. But I think I'd go with Bill Haas. Or Rory. I'd convince Rory to play. He's not in the field, but maybe I could convince him to play. Actually, Rory's probably going to be getting married instead.
True,
so, yeah.
True. I feel like if he was Bill Haas, though, it would just be like that old SNL skit, The Chris Farley Show, where he just remind people of how great they are. That'd just be like, hey, Billy, remember that time you won the championship?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was awesome. Yeah.
That would just be you for 4 days.
Yeah, I would be
or
the
two,
man.
I think Bill would withdraw after two. What
about yourself? You have a guy you'd like to partner with?
Man, how about Jim Herman? You know, keeps it
straight. Oh, yeah, Jim Herman, yeah.
Plus, it'd be one of the few guys I could probably outdrive. That makes me feel a little bit better about myself. I go Herman.
Okay, Hermie. Who's your fourth guy for this week?
Let's go Billy Horschel, who kind of in the same vein as Hoffman. Last 4 years has logged 3 top fours in San Antonio. Also a new dad. I don't know if you saw it. He raced home last week from a Tuesday practice round in Hilton Head to attend the birth of his daughter. Well, and then it was back on time for
back.
Third. Yeah, that's a man dedicated to his craft.
That is.
Really is.
Yeah.
Looking at his stats, he doesn't do anything really spectacular, but he does rank in the top 15 in greens and regulation. As we mentioned a few times, it's going to be a tough course. I think guys who are able to hit greens at least give them a chance to not even make birdie, but just have that par locked down. I think it's going to be big. I think Horschel, who, you know, he's had an okay year. I think he's had a lot of early starts and kind of failed on the weekend. It'd be interesting to see how he holds in, but I think this is a course that kind of speaks to him. I think Horschel's a good bet for a top 15.
It's a man dedicated to his craft and a very understanding wife. Although we've seen a lot of that this year, guys getting married and putting off the honeymoon.
I believe Horschel's wife also, because she was pregnant as well during his tour championship or his FedEx Cup run a few years ago, and she said, "Stay there,
just keep it going."
Yeah, and you know, I think they after he won, they had the kid 2 days later.
Well, that paid off because he could pay for college for his
good point.
Through
and she's
grandkids
a golfer, I believe,
well,
so
too.
She gets it too.
Yeah, that was you ride that heater to a $10 million bonus. I mean that's definitely well worth it. So good for him. Good for them. Congrats. But all right. Anybody else that you wanted to talk about or anything in particular with this week's tournament before we wrap up?
No.
All right. Yeah, it's the Valero Texas Open. I mean, let's be honest. It's not the sexiest of events. Next week will be really interesting, although I don't know how fantasy it's going to work. That's going to be.
We'll still hop on a podcast, talk about it.
Yeah,
it's going to be a fun event. I think that's kind of the one. I feel almost bad because of it's been a while since a tournament has drawn this much excitement, at least the Zurich Classic, in terms of build-up for an event that's kind of on the smaller tier. So
definitely.
Unfortunately, one of the upshots is I think Texas Open's getting slightly overlooked because
of
that. But,
yep.
I think we can have a lot of fun next week in terms of not only the pairings, but just how it's going to unfold. I think a lot of guys are looking forward to it.
Definitely. Well, good luck to everybody out there with your picks this week. Again, check out fanduel.com/golfdigest, get in the mix with the contest there. And please check back next week when we talk about the Zurich Classic and everything else that's going on in golf. So thanks again for listening, and see you next week.